Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I am your host, Stuart Butler, and I am joined today with the perspicacious Adam Stoker. How are you, sir?
You know what, Stuart? I'm doing really well. I appreciate the compliment because obviously everyone knows that perspicacious means very wise. And the problem is I played basketball early this morning, and so I'm a little more perspiracious than perspicacious today.
Yeah, that was a slip of the tongue. It was Freudian. I actually meant perspiracious, so we'll stick with that.
Okay, thank you.
So you got up early, played basketball. We've also got a guest with us today that has gotten up early. He is on West Coast time. It's currently just after 10 a.m. Eastern, so it's like bright and early, 7 a.m., but we're welcoming to the show for the first time, Dan Janes. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Now, Dan, we've met before at a couple of events. I'm a big fan of the stuff you have going on at Madden. Matt Steiker and I and Kwaku Amudi, big fans of them, and we chat a lot, especially at conferences. But I gotta own up to something. I thought your name was Dan James with an M until I got the emails this past week scheduling this. So I've been in my head naming you wrong this whole time. So I apologize for that. It's Dan James with an N. So sorry.
The level of disrespect.
I know.
It's like that's never happened to me before.
I can imagine.
You know, occasionally an O. You know, get Jones once in a while. You know, anything. You know.
Yeah. What makes it worse for me is I'm a Manchester United supporter. As you can tell behind me, I have a Roy Keane, greatest captain in the history of sports, jersey. But we had a player for a while called Dan James, so that I'd always associated you with him. So Dan James with an N. Welcome to the show. We are really excited today. Well, you brought a feisty topic. It's going to be good.
Stuart, I got to tell you, so the three of us actually have something big in common, and that's that we share a favorite podcast, and that's the All In podcast. And it was pretty cool. I actually met Dan last year, kind of middle of last year, and as we got to getting to know each other and talking to each other, we kind of figured out that we both liked. In fact, I think Dan had listened to the show and knew that I liked the All In podcast, and that's what got us talking about it. But then he's like, are you going to the All-In Summit? I said, yes, are you going to the All-In Summit? And we actually got to hang out for a couple of days in L.A. at the All-In Summit last year and just had an incredible time. So it was great to hang out with Dan. I'm really excited to have you on the show, Dan.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Adam. And had an equally great time out there, of course. And really love that pod just for so many of the timely topics they're talking about, especially around AI and the importance of energy and now the talk about, whether chats are protected, a whole other discussion, especially as we think about, ChatGPT-5's discussion talking about health. And that's a whole different level of, scrutiny and access that government has to records as well. So some relevant topics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, gents, you did a phenomenal job telling people to stop listening to this useless podcast and go listen to the really useful All-In podcast. But it is on my weekly list. I learn so much from it. I get little tidbits every episode. It's very good. It delves into political stuff, technology stuff, economy stuff. It's a must listen, I think, for anyone that's really trying to figure out what's going on in the world. And so we try to do that here, but they're all billionaires and, part of the administration, and they know way more than we do. So definitely go listen to that, because we're just a bunch of jokesters and, we're perspiracious. So, but thank you for tuning in. And I know one of the reasons people like to tune into this show, I mean, it's probably the reason, to be honest, is the jingle. And so it's time for Stu's News.
Dan's been waiting for this. I know that. It's just so good. The happiness that shows up on your face.
I love it. This is my happy face. What is a galaxy cruise?
A galaxy cruise?
Yeah, it's no interstellar cruise. It's an interstellar cruise, is what it says, right? Is that what we do on the show?
No, I think you're misinterpreting that. You're thinking like an interstellar cruise ship. But what it actually means is that you've got such a far reach and our audience reaches so far that we have Desties that are an interstellar crew across multiple planets,
so
ecosystems, solar systems. Yes. So just a common misunderstanding there. So I'm glad you asked for clarification.
So the destination expands into Stella, and that's our crew out there. I got it. Well, thank you for clearing that up. That's not actually the
Anytime.
Stu's news this week. The Stu's news this week is ChatGPT 5. Now, this has been highly speculated for a long time. People have been sort of excited about this for a variety of reasons. It's getting us closer to general artificial intelligence. It's getting us closer to a singularity. What I'm most excited about is I think it's going to take the training wheels off for a lot of people. You know, in talking to average folks, they're using ChatGPT essentially as helping them write better emails, helping them ideate and think through some problems, but they're not actually using it to improve effectiveness and efficiency of their job, right? They're just sort of taking shortcuts, is what I would say. But ChatGPT 5 does a couple of really good things. One, just its cognitive ability is PhD level. Like it's so much smarter than anything that's come before it. But more importantly, it discerns what your intent is and it can choose how to process that. So right now, if we wanted to do agentic stuff, we'd have to go to the agent version. If we in multi-step, if we wanted to do deep reasoning, we'd have to go to the reasoning model or the research model. Right now, it brings it all into one prompt. So I can prompt anything I want from image generation to deep thinking, and it knows what I'm asking and it will route it accordingly to the right process. So the quality of the response is just going to be better. The amount of work I can get done is going to be significantly more. And there's also some really cool features, one of which I'm going to love, one of which you're really going to hate, Adam. Okay. So the one I love is it's going to reduce the use of superfluous emojis. You know, I get very annoyed at how many emojis it just arbitrarily puts in, including the check marks and
You
things like
mean the
that.
fire emoji on every bullet point is
Yes.
not a pro for you?
Yeah, that's a pet peeve. I could do a whole episode on that. Wait, I think you might not like it as much. I don't know if you remember, there was an issue in ChatGPT 4 a while ago where it was way too sycophantic. They had to bring it back, right? It was too nice to the prompter. But it was still, even after they fixed it, it's still like it acts like you're the best thing since sliced bread, whoever you are and whatever you say. So when you give it an idea,
It's a
it's like,
validation engine.
that's great. That's a great idea, even if it's terrible. They've reduced that significantly. So, Adam, unfortunately, the one and only sycophant that you've ever had, ChatGPT, is no longer going to be sycophantic to you. But I think for the greater good of the human race, I think that's a really positive.
Yeah, ChatGPT was my offset for this podcast, actually. So I would come and just take a beating on this show, and then I'd go have a therapy session with ChatGPT. It would tell me how wonderful I am. And so I am going to have to find another outlet now that GPT-5 is out.
So Dan, I know I want to bring you into this conversation. I know you've gotten a chance to play with this. You said you were up pretty late last night. So again, appreciate you getting up early this morning. But what are your first impressions? What do you think this means to everyone, but really to our industry too?
Yeah, one, I think in a lot of ways, ChatGPT 5 was a catch up in where OpenAI was compared to some of the others. I felt like they've been lagging both Grok and Gemini for a while, and how they were going and how we were using them, and definitely lagging Anthropic's as well. But as what we saw there is we continue to see a better elevation of context, reasoning, being able to get rid of all of the things that were self-reinforcing behavior that was reinforcing the hallucinations, right? That you would see where it would say, well, of course you said this is true. So therefore that must be true, and it would reinforce it and even find you references that were hallucinated there. So I think we're going to see a lot more truth and everything that comes out of there. What really impressed me, it was, doing a few different things with building conceptual landing pages and things like that, that it was generating and on brand and pulling the right themes, the right bullet points that I would have taken me, half a day to mock up and, hand over to a developer. Here it was coded and live, well, not live, but able to be previewed and run in the browser there. So we're seeing so many more capabilities to get through the churn of ideas and process at the very front end, so we can get to the further part of the conclusion, and at the end, that's there.
Yeah, I think that agentic part where you can give it a prompt and it can actually build stuff, deploy code, all that, make games, make tools. That's, I think, where we as an industry need some help and guidance. I've been talking to Jeanette a little bit at Brand USA, and she's created a couple of groups. And one of the things we talked about recently was creating function-specific groups. So like a group for sales folks where they can share the types of tools they're building using AI and how they're streamlining processes. One of my pet peeves in the industry is there's so much inconsistency between standard operating procedures for the same function, right? And there are tools that people use that are standardized in some cases, but how we use them and our protocols are so varied. And I would love to see some leadership within the industry come together and sort of define, here are some best practices, here are some tools that have been created open source or free to use and or paid, and us just get better, because I think there's opportunity for a lot of folks to do things faster, smarter, more effectively across every division of our DMO space. So I'm excited for this, but I think it opens up opportunities for providers, for the big institutions as well, to help us navigate how to use this. Because there's still, when I talk to folks, a lot of folks super overwhelmed, and that's not gonna diminish unless we get resources, training, tools to help us. Adam, you were gonna say something?
Yeah, there's two things with GPT-5 that I'm excited about, and each of you is a leader in an organization that has to coach a team, right? And there's kind of the base layer of leadership is when you give someone a step by step, I need you to do this, and then I need you to do that, and then I need you to do that. But what really over my career that I've had to learn the hard way is that people don't really grow until you give them an outcome. And they kind of have to build the roadmap of how to get there, right? And what this GPT-5 release, I think, does is allows you to go from coaching with your prompts to ChatGPT, from doing a step by step, okay, do this, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do that. You give it the outcome, and it's going to do a lot of the figuring out of how to get there. And I think that's going to be a big change for people that have been using ChatGPT because. I think that's been one of the big limitations is I've really had to step by step go through it. And there have been moments where it's like, oh man, if I just wrote this myself, I might be able to get there almost as fast just because I have to go through all these steps. So to be able to now give it an outcome and have it do that, I'm excited about that and I want to test it. Number two, I've been building a personal project that's really been just for me to try to use AI tools a little bit more. And it's I'm not a developer, but it's a software platform, and I've been using a platform called Lovable. And Lovable is really interesting because it allows non-developers to create almost anything. And my mind has actually been blown by what I've been able to do with Lovable because I could never do this if I had to actually learn to develop. But Lovable has had some limitations because it's been using older ChatGPT models. And so, for example, the text generation is one part of the thing that I'm building, and then image generation after the text is created has been the other. And you're still getting kind of the things that, like, it's what happened with the Mataris Best campaign, right? Like, it still has these weird misspellings when you're trying to create images and stuff. And I'm hoping that GPT-5 eliminates some of that, the misspellings and things like that that were happening in image generation. And Lovable just released GPT-5 as the backbone that you're creating on yesterday. So I can't wait to kind of play around with it over the weekend and see how much progress I can make using GPT-5 as opposed to the previous models that Lovable was building on.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Lovable. There's also another one that recently was shared with me that may be a little stronger, called, I don't know if it's Replit or Replit, Replit, similar, right? Where you can sort of give it what you're trying to accomplish and it can build it and deploy it for you. So vibe coding is a real thing. And I think everyone needs to at least dabble in those technologies. There's certainly things, tools that anyone could create to make their lives easier, to automate things or semi-automate things. And I think we've just got to get used to our brains focusing on it, on, not necessarily us solving the problem, but us building tools to solve the problem. I think that's where we're heading. So Yeah, I'm excited. Everyone, if you're not using ChatGPT yet, what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
It's like it's
What
been
year is
out for
it?
almost 3 years or whatever.
I
But
think
what's that?
what's interesting what Adam said though at the very front though is people focused on process versus outcomes. And like we don't talk enough in outcomes, as individuals and people, right? Where we know our goal is to get to this and help us get there first. And I think we ha struggle with that. A lot of leaders struggle with that. A lot of managers struggle with that. And oftentimes it's the difference between managing and leading, right? Is managers will manage the process, leaders will tell you where to go and how to, not necessarily how to get there. And I think that's a broader commentary and just who are you hiring? And, as we think about workforce development and as we think about employee development, it's not about how do they use the agent more or how do they use ChatGPT more, but how do we actually help them, define what those outcomes are, but hopefully keep them curious so they're exploring those things and finding new ways to do it, which I think is just the most important skill to be hiring for right now.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So go use ChatGPT, especially play around with five. Test your limits, man. Don't play it safe. Go stress test. If Adam can vibe code, then Lord, everyone can do it. So,
You're right, actually.
He's the least coding coder I've ever met. So you guys certainly have a shot at it too. Let's shift gears. Dan, we invited you on the show. We, as we do with a lot of our guests, we say, what's your pet peeve or your friction point in the industry? And man, you came with a pet peeve for sure, and an opinion, strong opinion. So you want to share it with our audience?
Awesome. Yeah, I'd love to. So, of course, there's lots of conversations that you guys have had over having over 40 episodes out now. And one of them seemed to draw multiple people into the engagement. That was the RFPs. Of course, one of our big things that we work with across the space and an important way to engage, contract, do all the things that are necessary for business and do all the things that are necessary for transparency and accountability as well, that are important tools. But I think one of the things that maybe I'll start at the front part and finish it a little bit with, some of the recommendations is that as we look at RFPs, one of the things that we all agree on is that they're optimized for the past, not for the future. And as we think about how they get built, they're cut and paste and shared, and they're very much about the process of things that have happened and how to do what's already being done. So when we have major technology leaps like what we have today, it actually makes it more challenging to shift and to make those adjustments. Where if you did an RFP even 3 years ago when ChatGPT launched, the importance of paid media might have been a bigger component of it. So when organizations priced, engaged, whatever, they would be focused on how much media was doing and what is the least amount of cost that we can pay the agency. Well, now as we look at AI overviews and SEO and PR being so much more important for discovery and more important where the consumer is, that entire piece has shifted, and the RFPs sometimes prevent some of those budget shifts from happening and getting aligned there. So I think that's one of the things that make it important as we think about how RFPs are done, how we prepare them for the future, and a big part of that has to be how do we rewrite them in order to be thinking about where we want to go and the possibility instead of how do we protect the organization necessarily, from a process standpoint. And I think the two other points that I might make here is that, one of the things was you think about creativity and you talked about the small projects that were out there of small projects. And I think there's an area that it's oftentimes that when we think about spec creative or we think about work that gets done in these RFP things, so much is this focus on that one spec idea and the number of spec creative concepts that actually end up seeing the light of day. I feel like it's like 10%, right? And I'm probably overemphasizing for a little bit of drama there, but they're there to start a discussion and show people how you think and show people how you get it. But then when we actually go to launch or work on campaigns, that becomes something different, right? You get new data, you get new research, you understand strategy. So as you think about projects, and if you're going to have a tailored project, for what the future is, I would recommend you don't look at projects that are focused on, who has the sexiest campaign creative project there, but actually who do you have the most strategic alignment there? And I think when we think about strategic alignment, we think about, what are the KPIs, what are your business objectives, and what do you want to change and move as an organization? Kind of maybe some of the comments I made earlier about thinking about outcomes over process. And that's going to help us to grow there. And probably a larger commentary about how do we move financial incentives, both for the DMOs, but also for agencies, to be aligned with performing against key business objectives instead of treating them like cost centers. So
Yeah.
a lot there.
So number one, the RFP episode has gotten a lot of traction, right? It's one of our most popular one, but it's also one that people have sort of reached out almost probably the most about, because I think everyone on both the agency side and the DMO side feel like it's broken, but they don't have an alternative solution. I think I'm going to try to parrot back what I think I heard you say, which is we're focused on the inputs. The function of what we do, like, okay, we need someone to do our pay-per-click on Google, and we need someone to do our paid media strategy, and we need someone to do our social media thing. Like, so we're focused on the act of doing the inputs and not on the outcomes, right? And the goals and the overall objectives. And so I agree with you. I think it's challenging. I think if I look at it and put my agency hat on from my old days, I've got to hire subject matter experts, and then I've got to budget in a way so that I know I can afford to keep those people employed in these divisions, right? We have silos within an agency. The structure of an agency is groups of subject matter experts. And then on the ad side, there is we're still sort of operating in the world of not risking things, of doing what's familiar, of doing what we know and are comfortable with. And I think we got to figure out a way to get our agency partners or our internal teams to be very cross-functional, right? We can have specific expertise. We need someone that really deeply knows how Google Ads works, and we need someone on the team that deeply knows the ins and outs of the Facebook or the TikTok algorithm. But I think to isolate those people, right, and have them just perform that vertical function is where the problem lies, right? So I think I'm thinking forward, and I know Madden sort of does this. You have little pods of groups, right? But I think we've got to find a way for us to almost eliminate the job description or the job function and say, you're an expert, you're the subject matter expert on this piece of a bigger puzzle, but you're working on the whole puzzle at the same time with the rest of the team. Like, I think that's the only way to do it, because things are shifting so fast. How we do things is shifting, but also what we do and where we focus is shifting. That if we stay in this sort of verticalized expertise in silos, we're never going to be able to keep up. We're never going to be able to meet the demand. And big agencies, especially like the folks we use, the folks like Madden, are going to especially struggle because the smaller, nimbler, agile organizations are just going to be able to run rings around you in terms of keeping up with the latest trends. Is that a fair assessment of what your contention is? And then what's your reaction to sort of how I'm thinking about the future looks?
Well, I think one of your a fair assessment of definitely the critique that's in there, and then I'd say you're writing my sales pitch for me about why we chose multifunctional teams and why we have 80%, probably a little less than that, about 65, 70% of our teams are do about 70 to 80% of the business that a destination needs, and then the rest of them are that core expertise that go deep into SEO algorithms or earned media relationships or those, other specialties that are out there. So agencies have to adapt and be more nimble. Otherwise, the small agencies like the Brand Revolt,
I like Dan.
The worst part of this is that we're going to get to the point where I'm just going to have to change our name to The Brand Revolt because it's been said so many times. So I'm really
You're
trying
welcome.
to avoid that. We are Brand Revolt, everyone that's listening.
I couldn't not lean into that one. We're in the One West board meeting a couple weeks ago, and I definitely had to bring that there, and then realized that there were a number of people that weren't desperate. So.
Yeah, so Stuart, you know, you got mad at me one time when we were recording an episode of the Destination Marketing podcast, and I kind of started throwing some inside jokes from Destination Discourse on that episode. You're like, you can't do that. And we're sitting in the One West board meeting, and Dan throws out a joke that you would only get if you've listened to the show, and just crickets. Like that, the people
Yeah,
in that
they
room, for
weren't
the most part, they
desties.
were not Desties. They will be Desties. Yeah, it was funny because I just looked at Dan and I was like, you know, they're going to think that the name is The Brand Revolt because they don't get the joke.
That's funny. All right, it's
I mean,
Brand
it's
Revolt,
unlike
but
all
thank
my
you.
other jokes that normally land consistently and with humor and raving
Yeah.
applause. I mean, I laugh at them,
Hey,
that's funny.
can I add a couple things based on what Dan said? It's kind of interesting how this RFP discussion actually connects with our earlier discussion about AI and leadership. That one of my biggest issues with RFPs, and Dan actually helped me kind of see it a little more clearly here, is RFPs actually ask agencies to give the step by step, like they hand the step by step, here's what we want you to do. And what room does that really leave for the agency to show you what they're capable of? I would love to see an RFP that says, I want this outcome. I don't care what services go into that. I want you to map your services to that outcome. And then you actually get to see, okay, well, do these guys think through projects very well? Do they understand how to take an objective and build a cross-functional plan to accomplish it? I think that would make a major impact on the quality of RFP responses, as opposed, because the attempt is, well, let's get apples to apples. So if everybody has social media management and traditional media management and creative retainer and all those things in there, I can say, okay, well, it looks like Madden is 4% less expensive than so and so. Or maybe I should paint that differently, Dan, so I don't make it sound like you guys are the cheapest out there. Maybe Brand Revolt is 4% cheaper or whatever, right? Whoever's the it doesn't matter, but you're not comparing apples to apples anyway. And spec work, Dan, you kind of hit struck a nerve with me on spec work. Let me tell you my problem with spec work.
I feel like you're on your high horse right now. Is
Oh, I'm
this
ready here.
go?
I'm ready for this one. But with spec work, the agency, if they do a good job, if it's a good agency, they need more information from you than what you provided in the RFP to actually provide valuable spec work.
Wait, you don't you mean saying you can ask us questions isn't enough? Is that what you're saying?
The responses we get on those are always so enlightening.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And the best part is when they almost sound annoyed to have to answer those
Yeah,
questions
how dare
when you
you
get those
ask for
responses back.
clarification?
But then what you get is spec work that is probably entertaining, interesting, creative, but probably not anywhere near. Dan, I actually think you were generous in saying 10% of spec work sees the light of day. Because the reality is, we're going to submit spec work and then we're going to learn all the assumptions that we made that were incorrect when we decided to make that spec work. And we're going to have to redo it anyway, which means what you're asking for as a destination is dozens and dozens of wasted hours from the agency with the hope to possibly be the one out of 30 that wins. And then the last thing that I'm going to say here with that is this idea of just writing an RFP with the outcome and letting the agency build the plan, just like that's how you would find out if an employee has the ability to think through the issues that you're going to need them in to be a subject matter expert in your organization. The same goes for an agency. You're going to find out if they have the ability to build the correct plan to solve the problem.
Yeah. The
And
analogy
scene.
that I keep coming back to with RFP, thanks. That's actually funny. That made me laugh. The analogy I keep coming back to, it's like you're on a dating app, right, with someone in the RFP process, and you go straight from the dating app to a marriage. That's what we're doing right now with RFPs, right? We don't actually get to date. We don't actually get to know if we're compatible, if we see the world the same way, if we're actually, additive, if we actually, increase the value for each of us, each of the partners in the relationship. So I think I'm leaning increasingly towards this sort of concept of, I think you brought it up first, Adam, on the RFP episode of how do we give people a shot, right? Without saying, I want you to do XYZ specific function. but give people a goal and give people a shot at, and then you can evaluate how they think and how they reason, how they interact with us and performance, right? Because if you're right, we try to be objective by arbitrarily picking things we can see in the RFP process that line up apples to apples. So price becomes one of those things. Number of employees might become one, like location. Like there's a lot of sort of arbitrary things that don't necessarily indicate an outcome. They again, it's sort of just attributes that we can see before the work is actually done. And then we're really rolling the dice on who guessed best of what our taste is, or who guessed best about what our assumptions already are. And guessed is maybe a strong word, because there's certainly research that goes into who Model Beach is or whatever, you know, the agency does, but there's still an element of imprecision in that, in luck in that, right? And so we're sort of rolling the dice. So Dan, I want to bring in, shift in a little bit. There's something you said before we started recording about how you see the funnel being different. And I want to bring that in because I think it ties to what we're talking about. You know, one of the things is we're getting into marriage with an agency from, let's say, 3 to 5 years in a typical contract. At the rate that everything's changing, you know, technology is changing, consumer behavior is changing, expectations are changing, the media landscape's changing. If I contract you for 3 years in a scope of work, now I can certainly come back and negotiate it each year or whenever the contract, you know, renew every year for my budget. But it would be much more beneficial to me to have a more flexible arrangement with you that's fluid and agile. Like it's, you know, we sort of have a cap on the budget, but we can be have agility throughout as things change. But this is an example of that, where things are changing. So talk to me a little bit about what you talked about, the funnel, and how you see that being different or being reversed today than it was maybe 5 years ago.
Let me start by you have a lot of flexibility to make those changes in your organization and how you run and operate. Not everybody does, right? Because a lot of organizations are state contracting organizations or county or municipal contract organizations that have a different way of engaging than a lot of our 501c6 partners and whatnot that have a lot more flexibility. And, you know, they just go to the board and get those changes, or, you know, they're able to do it inside there. So a big hats off to you guys from an organizational standpoint. But also one more pin to say, you know, that's one of the things DMOs need to do to generate more flexibility to generate better outcomes for their communities is to look at those sort of models that are out there and get that independence.
Can I push back on that a little
Yeah.
bit? Like I feel like governments use that as an excuse, right? There's a way to do procurement in a smart, agile way. You know, I think we have to be specific about what we're contracting. But that specificity, we choose what it is, right? That specificity doesn't necessarily mean we need an SEO agency. It could be that we need an agency that helps us get more visibility and more traffic to our website, right? How they do that now, there's some flexibility. So I think people on the governmental side that sort of lean on these arbitrary, antiquated laws, I think it's lazy sometimes. I think there's opportunity to think, and especially right now with government, you know, there's sort of this trend, although it's not as sexy in the media, it's still very prevalent within governmental organizations around DOGE and efficiencies in general, that I think this is the time that if I work for a municipality or a county and I'm working on these things, I can rethink how I procure that stuff and how I define that specificity. Personally, I mean, I don't think everyone's going to want to take that risk, but we can look at this, how to solve the problem in multiple ways.
Yeah, for sure. And DOGE is much more about building better outcomes than being just cuts. But I think the reputation of DOGE has definitely been it's about cut and everything government does is bad, right? And I think that there's a opportunity to do exactly what you said of, you know, build better outcomes and, you know, change how we're doing business because it's time for a lot of that change.
But yeah, sorry. Carry on in terms of, let's go back to the funnel thing.
Yeah.
So tell us what you were talking about before we started
Yeah.
recording.
Yeah, so one of the big things that's been on top of my mind right now has just been the shift of what we're seeing in the marketing funnel. And I feel like there's this piece where brands and agencies are consistently trying to force the consumer into the marketing funnel because that's how we've always done it. And every time you go, see any of the programmatic media buy vendors or, Expedia or TripAdvisor or any of those, all of them are saying the same thing. The marketing funnel's broken, right? And then you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer and you see, these numbers of people don't trust a lot of marketing, advertising, they don't trust newspapers, a lot of the media outlets, but they really do trust small businesses. They really do trust people. They really do trust these other elements that are out there that are really generating what that behavior of where they want to go to seek that information on that side. And it's really brought me into this space to start seeing where are we seeing the greatest engagement and how are we seeing greatest performance to make recommendations for clients about where to shift budgets. And the more I see some of these big awareness campaigns and big brand pieces for DMOs, to make big brand impacts, you generally need big brand budgets, and you're still renting that attention if when they land, they're getting the same thing that they've had seen before, which is much of the contention I think you guys have around own content and own media across the channels that we've heard across the pod. I think the thing for me that's missing is that the consumer is an active part of what this is. And the consumer is actively in the search of discovery because we know they want to travel. We know what they want to do. It's just about matching that particular travel sector, what I like to call the traveler's query, who they are, what defines them, what they're seeking, with the destination keys. And the destination keys are those ownable differentiated assets that are something different. You might remember some of the ownable differentiated language from Matt and Kwaku earlier. But as we look at those, that is what we're trying to match the group that's out there. And it goes back to, for me, this is going to get really nerdy really quick, the transformer architecture of how AI does things. Of AI surfaces things you want to know. And it does that by understanding the entities and the objects around, those different elements or those keys and what the query is to try to find the best match to serve you something that you want, right? Now, getting that list is what the last part of this and the last part of how I think about it is, you deliver that value, and that's where you find that compelling and emotional story to deliver that perceived value back to the consumer there. So as you see that perceived value that shows up, they're able to get that discovery. They're able to see it and understand it because you've interviewed those small businesses, you've told those stories in your own channels. They're able to get it to build that greater trust. And then they're making that decision to purchase or to visit, in this case, as we think about DMOs.
Adam, you
And
want to respond to that?
I mean, Dan, of course, I think you're spot on with several things you said because you referenced back. We've kind of discussed some of these things on the show. But when you think about the creation of the marketing funnel and the same marketing funnel that we've been using now since, I mean, we're talking the 60s.
Yeah.
The marketing funnel has been the same. And that marketing funnel of awareness, consideration, and purchase was developed literally when there was five media options and people could either have local radio, local TV, national radio, national TV, and a newspaper, right? Maybe some magazine publications in there. And now we're literally talking that you could have a $50 billion budget and maybe not get a three frequency when you're trying to reach the, and for those that are listening, if you haven't looked too far into media buying. When I say a three frequency, it's that in order for somebody to take action, they need to see something at least three times within a specific period of time. And that's frequency. The idea of getting that frequency today through the methods of yesterday, it just doesn't make sense anymore with the fragmentation of media that's out there. Consumers have options. They have more options than they've ever had. And tomorrow they'll have more options than they had today. And so we've got to figure out how to look at the marketing funnel in such a way that we can identify who people are based on either their interests, location, or other categorization and find a way to reach them in multiple ways. And the historic marketing funnel, I think, is going to get harder and harder to do that with.
And I think that point that you make about, it's harder to reach them. It's harder to reach them because their attention's so spread, because they're looking at miles and miles of content that's out there when they're in that space that's being fed to them. But when they move to from that active piece of being fed information to thinking about discovery, like that's when you get them, right? That's when it gets exciting, and that's when the algorithms do the work that they're supposed to do on the paid media, because paid media is an incredibly important part of the strategy. But that's about how you help them discover you at the moments that they're looking for it, right? And then your content, and when we think about social, we think about influencers, earned, your SEO, or not your SEO, but your organic content. Those are things that we want to be able to see that trust getting built, because they're like, oh, I recognize that small business. Somebody else like me was on that trip, and they get to see that information helps build that trust with you as a brand, because they're all about ready to spend a lot of money. And it's not like they're trying to do consideration. They're trying to build trust so they can do the thing that they already want to do that they told us multiple touch points ago.
I want to add one more thing, Stuart, before you jump back in, and because Dan, you're making a really good point. The other addition is, when we look back at when the marketing funnel was created, advertising as a function was an interruption to a regularly scheduled program in some way, shape, or form, right? And so the consumer today has eons more control than they ever had back then. And we have not rebuilt the marketing funnel for a environment that the consumer has control of. And that's why some of these big brand campaigns with traditional methods of reaching people, they don't take into account that the consumer has total control. And that's why you have to build content. And again, of course, I've said this many times, you have to build content that they actually want to consume, because they have the control to turn it off in a way they never have before.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things that were different back in the 60s than now, right? And you touched on them, but I want to double down. I think one is, we were broadcasting out, right? We were sort of, it was one dimensional. There was no real reciprocation. It wasn't a conversation. It was a broadcast. And I think obviously that's not the expectation of the consumer today. The other is, you hit on this well, which is the consumer is an active participant in the funnel right now. They weren't back then. They were forced to consume. Now they have to make a series of choices, affirmative choices, before they even get to the purchase. So it's like the actions before the actions. They've got to choose to pay attention. They've got to choose to engage. They've got to choose. So it's a series of micro choices that the consumer's going to make. So I mean, we did an early episode on this, how I thought the funnel was broken, and we talked a lot about the loyalty loop. I thought we'd banned the word funnel from the show. Apparently that
Dan's
ban
bringing
is
it back.
temporary moratorium. But this the reason I brought this into the show when we started, people might listen might have whiplash, right? Because we start talking about RFPs and structures of agencies, and now we're talking about like the function of funnels and how people consume media. These are intertwined in my mind, right? Because we cannot have a traditional structure of an agency with traditional verticals of subject matter expertise at the same time that everything's changing really rapidly. We've got to have that agility in our teams that can adapt to this and to can try stuff, and try multiple things, because it isn't one dimensional. There aren't five channels anymore. There's literally millions of channels, and there's millions of individuals on each of those millions of channels. So it's not just about how do I reach my generic audience XYZ on this channel. It's how do I talk to Adam? How do I talk to Dan in a way that he is participating in that conversation? Because now we're searching, we're proactive. When I go to an LLM and start talking about where I want to go on vacation, I'm an active participant in that. And I'm an individual, I'm not a group label. And so we've got to be prepared for that. So that it does come down to content, content, and it also comes down to context. And that's, I think, where we're missing the boat as DMOs is we're still thinking about monolithic content and generic content that reaches a broad audience. And we've just got to get hyper atomic about our content and give personal perspectives from individuals who look similar to Adam or look similar to Dan. That first party account, first person account of what's good about Myrtle Beach or what's good about this restaurant or why you should do this or why you should do that is going to be a differentiating factor moving forward. And the only way we can do scale that much is to build a team that's agile and scrappy and contributes beyond their traditional label as a SEO expert or a social media person. We're all content creators now. Every one of us on the team has to be thinking about how do we create, disseminate, measure and track content, and how do we engage with audiences one-on-one? Like, we're all on the same team. We're all doing the same thing. We're just doing it in different roles on the bus. So that's why they're connected, even though it might seem like they're not.
Well, and we have brought up RFPs, so of course we're looking back into the past, which is how the funnel got brought back forward, right? We all know it's embargoed. The RFP.
We took a time machine, so it's okay. We're talking about things that used to be. That's pretty funny. Dan, how are you thinking about the future as an agency in terms of, maybe spend a minute or so sort of talking about your structure? Because I don't fully understand it. I know it's a little different. I know you sort of have these pods of functional groups. Tell us a little bit. I don't usually let the guests sort of self-indulge, but I will today because I'm curious, and I think the audience will be curious. But you guys set up differently. What led to that? How are you different? How are you thinking about even evolving that moving forward?
Team of teams is a big leadership philosophy that I've followed from General Stanley and McChrystal. It was successful in how I did a lot of things back when I was in the military and in a different space and time. But we really saw the value of putting multifunctional teams in one group, right? Where you have the ability to have somebody that's content expertise and media expertise and understands the destination, the client really well in a really defined way. So it's not just the account team that's trying to build your strategy. They have all these different experts that also know the destination and the brand that aren't in some trouble ticket group waiting for the next, media plan or campaign or website update to happen. They're part of the team of what's there. So, when I talk about they're able to do about 80% of the work, they do about 80% of the work that most destinations are going to do in building content, managing influencers, managing media, driving strategy, where the rest of the organization or part the our allied services are those people that have really specialized expertise in things like public relations and SEO and meetings and conventions to really understand how to do those things and work the angles of contracts and whatnot. So we think that's a differentiating component of what that specialty group is. And the further away the expertise becomes from the business outcomes and the problems of the client, I think the less aggressive of an team you get. Because they're just further away from the brand. They're further away from the opportunity set that capabilities could bring.
Right. It becomes a task, not a project, I guess. We got like 2 minutes left, but I'm going to ask a question that's going to take way longer, so we might have to have you back. But how are you evolving moving forward? Like, obviously, the threat of AI, like, we're already feeling that we're a lot more empowered as an internal team of, we got 10 people internally on the marketing team and about the same on the sales team. But this function that we used to outsource to agencies that we're able and more capable to do ourselves now, like, obviously, that's a threat. I'd be scared if I was sitting in either of your shoes right now, owning or running an agency. And how are you thinking about
I'm
that?
sure
How
you
do you
would.
future-proof the agency?
And you future-proof the agency by staying curious, and
Love
that's
it.
it. And if you're curious about the technology, you're curious about how to be there to help, then it's how you're going to continue to be there to make a difference. If you're there to be in receive mode, if you're there to be an order taker, if you're there to do things the way that it's always been done, then it's we're a relic that's out there. I think that the ability to
I'm
bring
glad Adam changed the name of his old agency
just in time.
yeah.
Oh, I missed that. I missed that connection, but yeah, valid. Yeah, for but I think that's really just the number one thing as we think about just from a time constraint piece. I'd go on, for a whole episode about what it means for the future of agencies, leadership, professional development, all the other things that.
Yeah, we might need to do that, like have a round table, have a few agencies on here and talk about that. That would be a cool
That'd be
episode.
awesome. I'd love that.
Well, great. Adam, do you have any final questions for Dan before I give everyone a chance to wrap up?
Well, yeah, I've got more questions for Dan, but maybe we do it on another episode when we've got more time, because I think it's really, obviously I'm operating with a very small team in a little bit more of a narrow category, and Dan has a team spread out across the country, and I would love to just brainstorm agency structure all day long, but I think it might be more self-indulgent for me than for the audience. But Dan, I've really enjoyed the topic you've brought today, because the dots between RFP structure and even where AI is going are more connected than people think. This idea that the old structure is going to lead to new innovation with an agency, I actually think you're setting the engagement up to fail if you don't structure that RFP correctly. So, really appreciate you, first of all, watching the RFP episode before and bringing an additional kind of twist on the topic to us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, any final thoughts for you, Dan, before we sign off?
Looking forward to, I don't know when this will air, but looking forward to seeing you all at Esto and seeing the destination live.
Yeah, this will actually be out after Esto, I believe. So people will have either seen us dramatically change the industry or fail and fall flat on our face in a live session. So one of those two things is, either way, it's entertaining. So I
Yeah,
think.
Dan, we may need you to seed a question for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
You
put
know where to
plants
find me.
in the audience.
Yep.
So yeah, Dan, thank you for this. Adam, couldn't agree more. I think it's all interconnected. We've all got to do better tomorrow than we did today, and it starts with how we select our vendors, how we work and engage with our vendors, but most importantly, how we interact with our visitors. That's the key. And they're changing, technology is changing, expectations, behaviors. We've got to change with it. Otherwise, we're going to be obsolete. AI could make us obsolete. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Dan, if they want to reach out to you, where can they do that?
Feel free to reach out to me personally on LinkedIn, Dan Janes, J-N as in Nebraska, ES, or djanes@maddenmedia.com. Look forward to reaching out and talking to people.
We got to
Great.
get you on
And
Tourism IQ, Dan.
absolutely.
there it is. There's the shameless plug from Adam, the ubiquitous shameless plug. Adam, they want to reach out to you.
You can obviously find me on Tourism IQ, like I said, but also on LinkedIn or adam@thebrandrevolt.com. And I want to reiterate for everyone, just from our conversation today, interruption as a strategy is not going to work anymore. And so, really excited for the conversation we had. And Dan, would love to have you back to continue it.
Great. Thanks, Adam. Please leave a like and subscribe. More importantly, share this show with your friend. If you have a friend, number one, hopefully you do. Otherwise, we'll be your friends. But please share it with someone that you feel like would get some value out of this, whether they're on the DMO side or the agency side. We're really trying to bring the industry together under the destination to make a difference. We love this industry. We know it can be better. And this is a love letter to everyone and a therapy session at the same time for us. So thank you for listening. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks,
Discourse.
everybody.
I can't
Ooh,
speak. I don't know. What was
that
that?
was
That was
rough.
weird. Whew. All right. Bye, everyone.
You really stuck the landing there.